Well, it's that time. So I may as well just keep the mic. Apologetics. Is that the name of a band, Rip? Less. Okay, good. That's French for yes, right? Okay. Hey, more on the Passover Seder. You're going to love this one. Thursday, week ago Thursday, we went out and looked at a room where we could have a Passover Seder. It was a nice room. It would seat about 70 people, and nice kitchen attached, really nice. So we went and we're doing the arrangements with the church secretary to rent this room. And while we're in there, kind of schmoozing with the church secretary, sending out meals to those that can't be there. No. No, you know, you can always come here from Arizona and enjoy the wintry weather. Anyway, so we're in there schmoozing with the church secretary, and in come these two people, man and his wife, and it seems that they're on the church's planning board. Okay, so while we're there talking, the church secretary introduces us, and she says, you know, they're going to have this Passover Seder on the 18th of April, and she said, you know, the wife said, you know, we were thinking about having a Passover Seder of our own, but we couldn't figure out how to do it. You know, we have no idea how to go about it. I said, well, why don't you just come on over to ours? And she looked at her husband, and they looked at the church secretary, and the three of them started brainstorming, trying to, you know, deciding, you know, what all is going to happen. So this past Monday, church secretary goes to the elders' meeting. And she brings the whole thing up to the elders, and the elders said, well, that's, you know, that we invited them to come for our Passover Seder. And the elders said, well, if that's the case, you know, we're going to have the bigger room, because the room for 70 isn't going to be enough. So what turns out is they've got a room that seats 160 people easily. And they decided they're going to move us to the bigger room. And not only they're going to make us move to the bigger room, but they're not going to charge us for it. And so this is all good. It seems that, you know, we were there that last Thursday. You all hearing me, by the way? Yeah, okay. We were meeting with the church secretary. I was supposed to be there around noon, and I didn't get there till almost 1 because, you know, stuff happened. My wife didn't get relieved from work and stuff like that. So anyway, we're sitting there. We got there an hour late, and if we had not been there an hour late, these two people that were on the planning board wouldn't have been there. And they wouldn't have been brainstorming and all that, right? So, you know, it may not have worked out like that. Meanwhile, y'all know it was just coincidence, right, that I happened to be late and those people happened to be there. You know, so not coincidence. We serve a God of coincidences. You know, Jehovah is a God of coincidences. He makes it all work. So, anyway, we're going to be having all of that to lead into this. We're going to be having a Passover Seder here in Massillon, Ohio, on April 18th, and you all are invited to come as well. I realize, you know, you're everywhere, and most of you are not going to be able to get here. But I put out this thing last week. And if you would like to attend our Passover Seder, if you're possibly going to be in the neighborhood, or if you live within a few hours of here and you'd like to come, we're opening this thing up to y'all. And last week we were talking about charging $5 and bringing a covered dish. We've decided that that's not going to work because we're going to have all these church people there. We don't know whether they're going to know how to serve clean food, so we're going to provide all the food, but they're providing the venue, and, you know, no charge to us for that. So, yes, remember that subject line, exactly, send me an email, mark@patron.net, subject line Pesach Seder. We've got I've got confirmed reports of 25 to 30 people that are planning to come and join us. So that plus the people that are going to be there from the church. Oh, and by the way, the church, the elders at the church said, well, can we invite these other two churches that we work with, you know, on different stuff? And they asked me if that would be all right. And I said, sure, why not? So as it turns out, we're going to have a pretty good sized crowd there. And yes, we got the big room, and we got the big room for free, Rip, for free. They're going to give it to us because we invited them to come. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. The small room that seated 70 would have cost us $90, and the big room that seats 160 would have cost us like $300, and they're going to just let us have it. And it's got a much bigger kitchen, and I mean it's just new. And also, by the way, I told them that I needed to print up a bunch of Passover Haggadahs, you know, so that people could follow along as we're going through. And church secretary said, well, why don't you just get me a copy of that and I'll print them. So they're going to print all the Haggadahs for us too. It's going to be no cost to us at all. The zip code there, Massillon? I'm not sure. 443 something or other. 44646, is that right? Really? Okay, be that way. Okay. So, give us an email and a subject line of Passover Seder and a number of people that are going to be coming. Okay. So, all that said, let's go ahead and get started with today's Midrashic Bible study. Father, thank you for bringing us all here together today. Put your Holy Ghost on each and every one of us so that we will be able to take and apply it to our lives and take that which is false that comes out of the mouth of this guy that's droning on and just flush it for us, Father. And we ask it in Yeshua's name and praise you for the answer to that in Yeshua's name. Amen. Oh, and by the way, Father, while we're at it, I'd like you to take the minds of the enemy as they're listening in, the enemy in the spirit world as well as in the physical world, and just confuse their minds so that they can understand cannot understand a word we're saying. In Yeshua's name, amen. Good. We'll look forward to seeing you, Mark. Let's see. Midrash for Shabbat today. This is we're doing Exodus chapter 6. I got the right one. Yeah, I do. Okay. Chapter 6 and verse 2 to chapter 7 and verse 7. And we're going to do 6, 2 through 8 right now. Wait a minute. I seem to have lost the... There it is. I'll bring that up a little further so I can see it. And move to Genesis. I'm sorry, Exodus, rather. Exodus chapter 6. Starting in verse 2. And Elohim spake unto Moshe, and said unto him, I am Yehovah, and I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Yaakov, by the name of El Shaddai. But by my name Yehovah was I not known to them. By the way, in the King James, it actually says in that one place right there, in verse 3, it says Yehovah. It does not say the Lord. Okay. And I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage wherein they were strangers. And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered their covenant, or my covenant. Wherefore, say unto the children of Israel, I am Yehovah, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. And I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you an Elohim. And ye shall know that I am Yehovah your Elohim, which bringeth you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you in unto the land, concerning the land the which I did swear to give to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov, and I will give it to you for an heritage. I am Yehovah. Remember that last week, Paro had pretty much signed the death warrant of his dynasty by refusing to even acknowledge that Yehovah and his demand that his people be allowed to go 3 days' journey into the desert to serve and worship him. Then he put more work on them because he assumed that they had too much idle time on their hands, and they wouldn't ask for a day off, or they wouldn't ask for a day off to go and worship a god that Paro had absolutely never heard of. The people had complained to Moshe about all the extra work that was put on them, and Moshe complained to Yehovah that he had made their lives worse by this command to go and worship them. Now Yehovah spoke to Moshe. His opening words are the ones that say, "Shut up and listen." He said, "I am Yehovah. I am the one who appeared to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, but I spoke to them as El Shaddai. I speak to you and Israel as Yehovah, a name which they did not know me by." Now that is the enabling clause, a thing that all good laws have. It is the statement that tells the hearer or the reader that the speaker has the authority to say what he says and expect obedience. Yehovah was saying, "I will brook no quarter, tolerate no mercy or pity against an enemy. Don't question my orders, just do them." Now, I'm giving you a speculation warning here because this is purely Mark speculation coming up. When we go back to Genesis, we see that what Avi and Yitzi and Jake certainly did know that Yehovah was a name of a powerful deity, perhaps as the chief deity, but they may have thought that El Shaddai and Yehovah were different gods. There were over 6,700 references that include the word Yehovah at least once, and Yehovah is recorded as having spoken to Avi numerous times. But it looks as though Avi thought that he was speaking to El Shaddai most, if not all, of the time. Even at Mamre, Avi addresses him as Adoni, not Yehovah. Yehovah works miracle after miracle in their lives, but Avi and Sarah keep speaking of Adoni and El Shaddai, not Yehovah. And they don't seem to make the connection between these two manifestations, or Sephirah, of Yehovah Eloheinu. Even in Genesis 22:14, where Abraham acknowledges Yehovah Yireh, he seems not to have made the connection between Yehovah and Elohim. Yehovah is the aspect of mercy, while Elohim is the aspect of judgment. And the general opinion of the patriarchs seems to me to be that they were not related. I truly could be wrong on this, but that is how it seems to me after what was admittedly a very light perusal of 1 Moshe, or Genesis. Even Yosef, who knew his Elohim on a more intimate level than any of his fathers or all of his brothers, only knew him as Elohim. If you look at Genesis chapter 39 and verses 1 through 9, which I'm going to do now, Genesis chapter 39 and 1 through 9, here's what it says. "And Yosef was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And Yehovah was with Yosef, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that Yehovah was with him, and that Yehovah made all that he did prosper in his hand. And Yosef found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had put into his hand. And it came to pass, from the time that he had made him overseer in the house, and over all that he had, that Yehovah blessed the Egyptian's house for Yosef's sake. And the blessing of Yehovah was upon all that he had in his house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Yosef's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Yosef was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Yosef, and she said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said unto his master's wife," now remember how many times we saw the word Yehovah before now, 5 or 6 already, right? "And he said to his master's wife, 'Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in this house, and he hath committed all that he hath into my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against Elohim?'" Okay? Yehovah has been watching out for him all this time, and he's worried about sinning against Elohim. Okay? Yehovah watches over him, and he's worried about sinning against Elohim. That's the end of the warning. Yosef didn't recognize that it was Yehovah that was blessing him. He thought that it was Elohim who was blessing him. Okay? He didn't seem to understand that Yehovah and Elohim are basically opposites within the Ein Sof, okay, the unknowable one. The Elohim is the manifestation of his justice and his judgment, while Yehovah is the manifestation of his goodness and his mercy. And so he recognized that he was being treated mercifully, but he thought he was being treated that way by Elohim, I think. Anyway, on to the rest of the notes. Yehovah told Moshe that he remembered his covenant with the patriarchs and had heard the groanings of Israel, and that he would now work greater miracles than even the patriarchs had seen to convince Paro that it would be best to let Israel do what Yehovah had commanded. So, Yehovah gives Bnei Israel a promise through Moshe that he will deliver them out of the bondage to Paro and Egypt and will bring them to the land that he promised Avi, Yitzi, and Jake and give it to them for an inheritance, theirs forever. What part of forever do you think they'd forgotten? Is so much like the people of Israel before or around 1050 BCE that they demanded, when they demanded a king, like all the other nations around them. Yehovah had a king in mind for them, but they wanted a king now. Reminds me of Beluka, the little girl who turned into a blueberry in Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka. I want my Oompa Loompa, and I want it now! Yeah, this is how they're speaking. We want a king, we want him now! So, Yehovah, being who he is, gave them their desire. Shaul, the king. They wanted to be like other nations then, and they want to be like other nations now. But Yehovah wants Israel to be set apart unto him, not like the other nations. If only the nation Israel, if only the Jews and the Christian church could understand this, the world would be a wonderful place. And there would be a much larger percentage of believers in it. Alas, we must wait until both Israel and all Jewish and Christian believers come to the end of themselves, as Israel did in Egypt, and call out for Yehovah's deliverance and salvation, as Israel did in Egypt, before he will answer with Moshiach ben David. I truly fear that it will take the Muslim beast system to bring us to that point. But when we finally reach it, Yehovah will answer exactly as he did in Egypt, with his stretched out arm. He has already delivered us from the bondage of sin. Then he will deliver us from the bondage of physical oppression. In verses 6 through 8, there are seven I wills of Yehovah, promises to Israel. Seven is the number of divine fullness and perfection. Let me read those again, real quick, like in Exodus chapter 6 and verses 6 through 8. It is written, "Wherefore, Israel, I am Yehovah, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments, and I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you an Elohim, and you shall know that I am Yehovah your Elohim, which bringeth you out from under the burden of the Egyptians, and I will bring you in unto the land, concerning the which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov. And I will give it to you for an heritage. I am Yehovah." Seven times. Okay, we're open to questions and comments up to the end of verse 8. Are there any questions or comments? If you have a mic and would like to take it, just raise your hand and I'll be happy to give it up. Hated what movie? Willy Wonka? Oh, what a great movie. Okay. I take it there are no questions or comments. Boy, is this going to be a boring day. Yeah, I like the original. I did not like Johnny Depp's version, but I did like the original. Exactly, Z. Miller. Ah, Vic Taylor, you have a question or a comment. Why don't you take the mic?
Thank you, Mark. I just want to address what you said with respect to the Muslims as the beast system. And I'm wondering if you're suggesting that they're the beast of Revelation. That's all I want to know. Are you suggesting that the Muslims today are the beast of Revelation? Thank you.
I'm suggesting that they are an aspect of the beast system. Yes, those are the ones who just love to kill people by cutting off their heads. And that's one of the things that the system will do. So it's just one of the aspects of the beast system. But yes, absolutely. All of the religious political religious orders are a part of the beast system, but yeah, I do believe that that's the case with the Muslims. They are a part of that. Okay, moving on to verse 9 and to the end of the portion. Okay. And Moshe spake unto the children of Israel. But they hearkened not unto Moshe for anguish of spirit and for cruel bondage. And Jehovah spake unto Moshe, saying, Go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. And Moshe spake before Jehovah, saying, Behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me, who am of uncircumcised lips? And Jehovah spake unto Moshe and unto Aharon, and gave them a charge unto the children of Israel, and unto Pharaoh king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. These be the heads of their fathers' houses, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, Hanok, and Palu, and Hezron, and Carmi. These be the families of Reuben, and the sons of Shimon, Yemuel, and Yamin, and Ohad, and Yahir, and Zohar, and Shaul, the son of the Canaanitish woman. These are the families of Shimon. And these are the names of the sons of Levi, according to their generations, Gershon, and Kohath, and Merari. And the years of the life of Levi were 137 years. And the sons of Gershon, Libni, and Shimi, and according to their houses. And the sons of Kohath, Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And the years of the life of Kohath were 133 years. And the sons of Merari, Mahali, and Mushi. These are the families of Levi according to their generations. And Amram took him Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife. And she bare him Aharon and Moshe. And the years of the life of Amram were 137 years. And the sons of Izhar, Korah, and Nepheg, and Zikri. And the sons of Uziel, Mishael, and Elzaphan, and Zithri. And Aharon took him Elisheba, daughter of Aminadab, sister of Nashon, to wife, and she bare him Nadab, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And the sons of Korah, Asir, Elkanah, and Abiasaph. These are the families of the Korahites. And Eleazar, Aharon's son, took him one of the daughters of Putiel to wife, and she bare him Pinchas. These are the heads of the fathers of the Levites according to their families. These are that Aharon and Moshe, to whom Jehovah said, Bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their armies. These are they which spake to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring out the children of Israel from Egypt. These are that Moshe and Aharon. And it came to pass on the day when Jehovah spoke unto spake unto Moshe in the land of Egypt, that Yehovah spoke unto Moshe, saying, I am Yehovah. Speak thou unto Paro, king of Egypt, all that I say unto thee. And Moshe said before Yehovah, Behold, I am of uncircumcised lips, and how shall Paro hearken unto me? And chapter 7, verses 1 through 7. And Yehovah said unto Moshe, See, I have made thee a god to Paro. That's a small g god. And Aharon thy brother shall be thy prophet. Thou shalt speak all that I command thee, and Aharon thy brother shall speak unto Paro, and he send the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. And I will hearken, or I will harden, rather, Paro's heart, and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. But Paro shall not hearken unto you, that I may lay my hand upon Egypt, and bring forth mine armies, and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know that I am Yehovah when I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them. And Moshe and Aharon did as Yehovah commanded them, so did they. And Moshe was 80 years old and Aharon 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. And here's Mark's notes. When Moshe told Israel that Yehovah was going to do, they didn't even hear him because they were so tired and distraught. So Yehovah told Moshe to go to Paro and tell him to send Israel out of his land. Moshe made another excuse. I can't even get Israel to listen to me. How will I ever prevail on Paro? And besides, I can't speak well in public. Yehovah didn't want to hear it. He said in a Mark paraphrase, Just you and Aharon go up to Paro and quit giving me excuses. Take my people out of Egypt. Then Moshe gives us the genealogy of Leah's three eldest children. Why only Reuben, Shimon, and Levi? I think it could be just to get to the rather extensive family of Levi, which it describes in pretty explicit detail down to the high priest that led them into Canaan, Pinchas. Pinchas, you'll recall, is the youngest son of Eleazar, son of Aharon, who killed the Israelite and the Midianite woman he was fornicating with in the tent of meeting, and thereby gained the rank of priest. Here it is in verses 6 through 8 of Numbers 25. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moshe, and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And when Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aharon the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. Wow, through her belly. I just thought of that. You know, this man may have just impregnated that woman at that point. And so that javelin killed three, maybe. Anyway, when it says Pinchas rose up from among the congregation, it implies that he was just another Israelite until the Ruach moved on him with a godly zeal to kill those who would defile the Kadosh, because it was in the holy place, in the tent of meeting, you understand, okay, that this was going on. And through the shedding of the wicked's blood to stay the plague, that had been unleashed against Israel. What would have happened if those two had gotten all the way into the Kadoshim with that their idolatrous actions? In my opinion, Pinchas saved Kol Yisrael that day. We'll actually get to see that in the Midrash a year or so from now. Okay, we'll go into more detail then. Yehovah told Moshe and Aharon to take Israel out of Egypt according to their legions. I suppose it was kind of like the colonial militias, except in this case it would be the tribal militias. I assume that the organization was similar, with the fathers leading their families in defensive strategies and tactics, and then meeting with the other fathers to organize the various families into cohesive units for mutual defense. I would also assume that when they got into the wilderness adventure, the four major camps worked on similar things to keep their common defense viable. Yehovah, again, told Moshe to go to Paro to say exactly the words that he would put in his mouth. And once again, Moshe begs off. I can't speak in public. in answer to Moshe's, what the rabbis call, demural. Cowardice is the way I put it, but they call it demural. Yehovah told him that as far as Paro was concerned, Moshe would be as a god to him. Now, in Egypt, Paro was a god. But I think that anyone who is not insane knows very well that he is not a god. He can't have stuff instantly on a whim as out of nothing. Only a god can do. Only God can do that. So I think that the signs that Yehovah gave Moshe to perform put the idea into Paro's head that this guy had the power of Elohim. Maybe he was Elohim, because Paro couldn't do the things that Moshe could do. His magicians were able to counterfeit all the signs that Moshe performed, but Moshe's demonstrated right off the bat that what he did was the outworking of a higher power source. Moshe was immediately something special in Paro's eyes, for what he did, and we're going to see it next week, what he did was able to make the royal magicians look silly. And I think that the wicked spirit that resided in Paro was flustered by this very different power source, one of a higher nature than his master, Hasatan. Not only would Moshe represent Yehovah El Shaddai to Paro, but Aharon would be his prophet. Paro would be afraid to raise his hand against either of them, and I mean literally afraid that if he touched them, he would be immediately reduced to a burned-out cinder, assuming that they could find that much of him. Yehovah could speak directly to Moshe, who would convey the word to Aharon, who would then faithfully speak them to Paro. Imagine for a minute what this would be like to Paro. Moshe would receive a word from Yehovah and then, stuttering badly, would repeat it to Aharon, who would then speak it out to Paro eloquently. Paro would think, this guy seems to be an idiot who can't even put two words together without saying 25. He's a completely unintelligible person who would have been killed without thought in my kingdom. And the other guy, who seems to be in complete control of himself and as confident as anyone I've ever met, defers to the idiot's authority. And these two are motivated by a spirit like I've never encountered before. I'd better watch to see how things play out before I act against them. There's more to this idiot and his mouthpiece than meets the eye. That's the way I think Paro thought about what was there. And now we're open to questions and comments on the Torah portion, because that's the end of it. Questions or comments? If you have one, raise your hand. I'll be happy to give you the mic. Anybody want to have the mic? Anyone have a question or a comment? If you don't have a mic, you can put one in the text. We'll see if we can answer it there. Yeah, I may be good, but I don't have it all. I'm expecting to hear from people who have a different perspective, maybe. I think that he was looking out and he was seeing this guy keeps digging. You really think that Paro saw Moshe as an idiot? It's a good possibility. I mean, think about it for a minute. He looks out and he sees Moshe getting the word from Yah, right? And then he turns around and he says to Moshe, like, maybe four or five words, but it takes him an hour and a half to get it out because he's got a really bad stuttering. This is the kind of person that probably would have just been wiped out in Egypt. You know, this is a less than perfect human being. And, so that's just how I think. It's a good possibility that Paro looked out and he saw this guy that couldn't talk. And somehow he got the message across to the other guy, and the other guy turned around and spoke with eloquence, very clearly and cleanly. So, I think that he looked out and he saw Moshe as an idiot. Okay. Have you ever heard Mel Tillis play guitar and sing? Yeah. Have you ever heard him in an interview stutters like you can't believe. Oh, the guy says 47 words to say too. You know? But when he sings, oh man, does he ever have a, I mean, it's like night and day. And it's like the spirit of the music is what's moving away. Yes, it's speculate. He had some kind of an impediment. He kept saying, I can't do this. So yeah, it is a speculation that he was a stutterer, slow to speak. Yeah, but I don't think he was just took longer to say things, unless it was like a stutterer who slows down in order to get the words out. Yeah, exactly. Maybe he was shy. Yeah, that could be too. That could be too. But you know what? When they started moving, and as a matter of fact, before they even started moving, because Moshe is going to come into his own, I think, in the next Torah portion. I'm not sure, but if not, in the next one. And Aharon doesn't do all the talking anymore. You know, it doesn't take very long that Moshe starts talking for himself. Okay, so anyway, are there other questions or comments? Aaron may have been more of an outgoing kind of guy. That's a possibility. Yeah, he may have had more confidence, maybe because he didn't have any kind of a speech impediment or have to slow himself down so that he could be understood. Well, we're going to see the calf incident in a couple of weeks. well, in a couple of months, actually. Yes, I can agree with that, Servant 60. He was upfront and personal. Are there other questions or comments out there? Oh, by the way, my dog is listening right now. Nikita, you're a good dog. My wife is working today. You know, she's a healthcare provider, and she has the dog with her in the home where she's providing the healthcare, and she's got the computer turned on to us. And she's listening. Ruff, ruff. There you go. And so my dog is probably laying under the table right now, listening to my speech because she does that every week. So Nikita, you're a good dog. There are no more questions or comments. I guess we'll move to the Haftarah. That's Shalom and dog speak. Rough, rough. Thank you. Okay, we're moving to Ezekiel chapter 28, verse 25 through 27, I think it is. And then chapter 29 through verse 21. So let's go find Ezekiel. Where are you? There he is. Yechezkel. Chapter 28, last three verses of the chapter. Last two verses of the chapter, I'm sorry. 25 and 26. Thus saith Adonai Yahweh, Adonai Yehovah, when I shall have gathered the house of Israel from the people among whom they are scattered, and shall be sanctified in them, in the sight of the heathen, then shall they dwell in their land that I have given to my servant Yaakov. And they shall dwell safely therein, and shall build houses, and plant vineyards. Yea, they shall dwell with confidence, when I have executed judgments upon all those that despise them round about them, and they shall know that I am Yehovah, their Elohim. Once again, the establishment clause. I am Yehovah, their Elohim. And then to chapter 29, and verses 1 through 21. Wait a minute. 29, verses 1 through 21. In the 10th year, in the 10th month, in the 12th day of the month, the word of Yehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, Set thy face against Paro, king of Egypt, and prophesy against him and against all Egypt. Speak and say, Thus saith Adonai Yahweh, Yehovah, Behold, I am against thee, Paro, king of Egypt, the great dragon that lieth in the midst of his rivers, which hath said, My river is mine own, and I have made it for myself. But I will put hooks in thy jaws, and I will cause the fish of thy rivers to stick unto thy scales, and I will bring thee up out of the midst of thy rivers, and all the fish of thy rivers shall stick unto thy scales. And I will leave thee thrown into the wilderness, thee and all the fish of thy rivers, which shalt fall upon the open fields. Thou shalt not be brought together, nor gathered. I have given thee for meat to the beasts of the field and to the fowls of the heavens. And all the inhabitants of Egypt shall know that I am Yehovah, because they have been a staff of reed to the house of Israel. When they took hold of thee by thy hand, thou didst break and rend all their shoulder. And when they leaned upon thee, thou breakest and madest all their loins to be at a stand. Therefore, thus saith Adonai Yehovah, Behold, I will bring a sword upon thee, and cut off man and beast out of thee. And the land of Egypt shall be desolate and waste, and they shall know that I am Yehovah, because he hath said, The river is mine, and I have made it. Behold, therefore, I am against thee, and against thy rivers, and I will make the land of Egypt utterly waste and desolate, from the tower of Syene even unto the border of Ethiopia. No foot of man shall pass through it, no foot of beast shall pass through it, neither shall it be inhabited 40 years. And I will make the land of Egypt desolate in the midst of the countries that are desolate, and her cities among the cities that are laid waste shall be desolate 40 years. And I will scatter the Egyptians among the nations, and will disperse them through the countries. Yet thus saith Adonai Yehovah, At the end of 40 years will I gather the Egyptians from the people whither they were scattered, and I will bring again the captivity of Egypt, and will cause them to return unto the land of Pathros, into the land of their habitation, and they shall be there a base kingdom. A base kingdom, that means a low kingdom. Yeah. It shall be the basest of the kingdoms, neither shall it exalt itself any more above the nations, for I will diminish them, that they shall no more rule over the nations. And it shall be no more the confidence of the house of Israel, which bringeth their iniquity to remembrance, when they shall look after them, but they shall know that I am Adonai Yehovah. And it shall come to pass in the seven and twentieth year, in the first month, in the first day of the month, the word of Yehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, causeth his army to serve a great service against Tyrus. Every head was made bald, and every shoulder was peeled. Yet had he no wages nor for his army, for Tyrus, for the service that he had served against it. Therefore, thus saith Adonai Yehovah, Behold, I will give the land of Egypt unto Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take her multitude, and take her spoil, and take her prey, and it shall be the wages of his army. And I have given him the land of Egypt for the labor wherewith he served against it, because they wrought for me, saith Adonai Yehovah. In that day will I cause the horn of the house of Israel to bud forth, and I will give thee the opening of the mouth in the midst of them, and they shall know that I am Yehovah. Interesting. The way these first two sentences are used makes me think that the two verses of chapter 28 are meant to be an introduction to the judgment of Yehovah to come down upon the satanic system that Egypt represents in chapter 29. I truly do not think there is any great parallel to recent events in Egypt. In fact, I truly believe that those events were the prelude to the events that are going to set up the satanic world system for destruction, and that Egypt, as a nation, will not see the wrath of Elohim any worse than any other part of the beast religious system, as she will be every bit as much its victim as will be Saudi, Jordan, and Lebanon. Iran and Persia, on the other hand, we'll let that one go. The house of Israel is, or rather, in 28:25, is whole Israel, not just ten Israel, as it speaks of Yaakov as well. The last words of verse 29 can be applied to the nations that will all be in the hand in Iran Persia's pocket soon. Israel is on the verge of being completely surrounded by the beast religious system. The judgments spoken of in verse 26 are enumerated over the next chapters of Ezekiel. Verses 29 through, chapter 29, verses 1 through 12. We'll go over right now and then we'll take a break. Who will this Paro be? I seriously doubt it will be the military chief of staff that's in Egypt right now, the one that's ruling Egypt right now. The elections will happen sooner than later in Egypt, I think. In verse 4, Yehovah says that he will put hooks in Paro's jaws and draw him against Israel. Is this happening before our eyes on the TV news? Are the fish that stick to his scales the smaller nations that hang on to the world system's every word and deed, that draw their sense of strength from his paying any attention to them at all? Or does the dragon represent Hasatan himself? Yeah. In the revelation of John chapter 12 and verse 9, it says, "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." And the fish represents, of his rivers represent the devilish minions, like the one that inhabits Paro in Exodus chapter 7. Now, I think yes is the answer to that question. It's both the nations of the world and also Hasatan himself. The spirit of Paro is the actual person being judged and condemned here. The humans he inhabits will receive of the judgments and plagues as well, but the human actor will only suffer temporarily until the final judgment of the great white throne in Revelation chapter 20 and verse 11. The demonic being that indwelt and empowered the Paro will go into everlasting punishment because he is immortal and has more responsibility than the man he infested. The Nile is antitypical of the river of life that flows from the throne of Yehovah Yeshua. In the heavens of the northern hemisphere, at the time of Yom Kippur and Sukkot, we can see the constellation Draco, the dragon, falling from the sky in a nosedive. We can see it every year. At the end of the night, during the early autumn, Draco sets face down at about sunrise. That's it. You can see it in Revelation 9. We read that up above where it says, "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast down into the earth." Okay? So that is represented by Draco, the dragon. The demonic Here I am. It is a star sign that has been since the beginning. If you look at Rolleston's book, The Maseroth, or E.W. Bullinger's book, Gospel and the Stars, or Joseph Seiss's book, Witness of the Stars. Rolleston was the main source for both Bullinger and Seiss, by the way. And by the way, you can also see the website, Biblical Astronomy. And let me give you the website on that. That is http://www.atlbible.org/astronomy/astronomy1.htm. I'll give that to you again. atlbible.org/astronomy/astronomy1.htm. Bob Wadsworth is the guy that runs it, and he's the guy that filled me in about Draco setting face down at Sukkot time. This guy watches astronomy, and he watches it according to the gospel that's written in the stars. You'll love that site if you get a chance to get there. By the way, he has an e-newsletter that he puts out once a month, and he charges $12 a year for that newsletter, and he tells you about the things that are happening in the stars and how they could reflect on biblical prophecy and as it's going to happen before our eyes. It's a really, really good website. You ought to take a look at it if you can. atlbible.org, astronomy, astronomy1.htm. Okay. in verses 6 and 7, tell us that the people of Egypt will know that Yehovah is when they realize that they have been the reed that Israel has been trusting instead of their Elohim, and that they have failed Israel every time Israel has needed them. Whenever Israel trusted to Hasatan's world system, he betrayed them and allowed their destruction. Yehovah is not mocked. They're supposed to be trusting him, Yehovah. When they trust the evil system of the world, it always betrays them. Verses 9 through 12. Verse 9 says that they shall know that I am Yehovah because Paro said, Nile is mine. I made it. That's what Paro says. Have you ever noticed that Yehovah is not pleased when someone usurps his place as creator? Syene is modern Aswan. Type it. Oh, the site? Yes, I'll do that. Let me do that right now while I'm thinking about it. It is www.atlbible.com/astronomy/astronomy1.htm. I believe that's correct. Let me make sure. atlbible.org/astronomy/astronomy1.htm. That is correct. There it is. Now, Bob Wadsworth's a great guy, by the way. Email him and say hello, and he'll email you back. He will get back to you. That's been my... Okay, so anyway, here we are. Verse 9 says that they shall know that I am Yehovah because Paro said, Nile is mine. I made it. Okay, now Syene, that's spoken of in verse 10, I think, or 11. That's modern Aswan. Now, there is a towering structure there. It's 111 meters tall and 3,800 meters long, and it's called the Aswan Dam. This is the high dam. They built a low dam before, and then they built this one behind it. It created Lake Nasser, which is 550 kilometers long and 35 kilometers wide, extending toward the south and Ethiopia. It was completed in 1970, 41 years ago. When it was filled, it displaced 100 to 120,000 Nubians to other parts of Egypt, Sudan, and other countries. Did Yehovah use the Aswan Dam to partially fulfill these prophetic verses? Possibly. There is yet another fulfillment to come, but that's possibly. Broken link?
Yep.
Okay, sorry about that. Is it .com or .org? Wait a minute, let me look again. Oh, I'm sorry, it is. It's .org, not .com. My fault. Sorry. It's .org. Okay, so we're open to questions and comments up to verse 12. Any questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah so far? Servant 60, you may have the mic. Take it away.
Thank you so much. Can I have a one? If anybody can hear me? Just a one. Ah, thank you. We're talking about, like the, last kingdom, of course, in Ezekiel. I believe that, the last kingdom, AB, Hebrew word for Arab, which means to mix or mingle. I believe that it is the last kingdom to be ruling over us, or as the Arab world over us. And I believe what is being portrayed now in the Middle East, heading towards Europe, we are not exempt from all that, because I believe that's going to hit our shores, if not already. And Ezekiel is, God is revealing that to Ezekiel as well as he did Daniel. Anyway, that's my comment. I release the mic to Ashkenon Bill.
Thank you. Yes, in verse 10 of chapter 29, I believe it was the Russians that built the dam. It was started in 1948. Could very well be that. Yeah, title is built. Yeah, I used to work there about 5 years. And in verse, the last two verses of 28, I believe what that's talking about is, especially verse 26 where it says, and they shall dwell safely therein and shall build houses and plant vineyards. I believe that is those that are not deceived by Satan as the false Messiah when he comes working his lying wonders and miracles. And they will be the ones that will be teaching during that time, as it says in the book of Jude, verses 14 and 15, to admonish those for all their ungodly speeches. And where it says, they shall dwell with confidence when I have executed judgments upon all those that despise them round about, and they shall know that I am the Lord their God. And in the last verse of chapter 29, verse 21, in that day will I cause the horn of the house of Israel to bud forth, and I will give thee the opening of the mouth in the midst of them, and they shall know that I am the Lord. I believe that is talking about in Mark chapter 13, verse 11, when it says, but when they shall lead you and deliver you up, take no thought beforehand what you shall speak, neither do you premeditate, but whatsoever shall be given you in that hour, that speak ye, for it is not ye that speak, but the Holy Spirit. That's what Peter was talking about in Acts chapter 2, where he said, in the latter days, the Father will pour out his Spirit on his servants and his handmaidens. Same thing with that was spoken of in Joel chapter 2. In verse 12 it says, now the brother shall betray the brother to death. Hebrews chapter 2 verse 14 identifies death as Satan. And the father and the son and the children shall rise up against their parents and shall cause them to be put to death. The reason why is because the ones that know the truth, which are of the church of Smyrna, they know the synagogues of Satan, they will be going through the tribulation. They will be brought up for a testimony that they are not to premeditate what they are to say in that hour. Their family and friends, they will be telling them that they're worshiping Satan. That's why they will be brought up for that testimony. And it says in verse 13, and you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And verse 14 identifies Satan. But when you shall see the abomination of desolation, it's desolator in the languages, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where he ought not, let him that readeth understand, then let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains. With the seven churches in Revelation, five of them need to repent. There are only two churches that understand the Father's plan, which is in Smyrna and Philadelphia. Philadelphia is doing exactly what the Father wants during that time. That's why they will be spared the hour of temptation. The reason why, because God is sending all those that wish to believe a lie as spoken of in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, strong delusion that they should believe a lie because they didn't love the truth. And the church of Philadelphia at that time will be silent because they would be going against God's plan. Amos chapter 5 verse 13, the prudent will be silent in that day because it's an evil time. Philadelphia is the hidden ones. There's a lot to it, but that's what I see in those scriptures. I kind of rambled on a lot. Hope I didn't lose anybody. I thank the Father in Yeshua's precious name. And I relinquish the mic.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate all of that. That was good. We have the conversation going on the text about Medes and Persians. And I think I've given the basics of that right now. Persia was down near the Persian Gulf, around the eastern side of the Persian Gulf, where Iran is at. But Iran also, it's a huge country. Iran is really a big country. It's bigger than Saudi Arabia, and it covers everything from Pakistan to the Persian Gulf and everything from the Indian Ocean north to the Caspian Sea. That thing is a good 600 or 800 miles square. It's a big area with a lot of people groups, and there was a speculation that the Kurds might be the Medes or the Persians, and I would say the Medes, if any of them. The Persians were more further south. I believe that when Assyria carried off the 10 northern tribes, Assyria is the northern part of that area too. The Kurds lived in like Armenia and points south towards the Persian Gulf, and in the neighborhood of where Laban was at, Haran. So that's pretty much the neighborhood that the Kurds are at right now. They're up in the northern part of Iran, the northern part of Iraq, and the far eastern end of Turkey, and they even get into Syria a little bit. So it's the Kurds have a large area. Kurdistan is a pretty large area. But those guys will all be coming south at about the same time as when Gog and Magog come down out of Russia and Eastern Europe and that western portion of Asia, and then they're coming south to take on Israel and actually the Messiah when he comes back.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. There are numerous fulfillments of every prophecy of Scripture. At least two, usually three or more. Think of the prophecies of the anti-Messiah and how it was fulfilled at least three times in history so far. And the ultimate fulfillment is yet to come. So, yeah, the ultimate fulfillment of all of those prophecies are going to come together all at once. I mean, it's going to be like bang, bang, bang. They're going to hit really quick. And we're beginning to see the beginnings of it. We're watching it happen on the news every night. Well, a lot of you guys are. I'm not because I don't have TV. Do you think the UN will hire the Syrian army to round some of the people of the sea? Of the USA, I'm sorry. To round some of the people of the USA. Yeah. Round them up, you mean? Will the UN hire the Syrian army to do that? No, I think they're planning on having the Chinese army do that to us. We've already got Chinese military in this country. They've set up what they call foreign trade zones. at least 250 of them around the country. And they are, yes, and they are Chinese military. And they're everywhere. They're everywhere. There are at least five of these foreign trade zones in every state. The governors of every state have created these foreign trade zones. And the foreign trade zones are foreign territory. It's absolutely disgusting what the American people have allowed to happen. Actually, we haven't allowed it because we didn't know what was going on until it was already done. Anyway, are there other questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah so far? Going once, going twice. Okay, then we're moving on. Verses 13 through 16, Yehovah promises to regather the Egyptians out of their captivity, as he did and will do to Israel, though he did not make them a great kingdom as they once were. Yehovah will see to it that they remain a base nation, not a leader among the nations of the world. The reason for this is seen in verse 15. When Egypt was a great nation, Israel would trust her instead of Yehovah, and that was always a problem for Israel. Yehovah will remove the temptation from Israel and not allow Egypt its former greatness. Abraham and Yitzhak had resorted to Egypt. Yaakov held out as long as he could, but eventually reality sunk in and he knew he would have to go and buy grain in Egypt. Okay? And then Solomon married an Egyptian wife to put together an alliance between them. When Jeroboam ran away from Solomon because Solomon was after him, because the prophet had given 10 tribes to Jeroboam, he ran off to Egypt. And that was where he found the golden calf worship, and Jeroboam brought the golden calf worship back with him. I mean, Israel has always relied on Egypt as four alliances, and they're not supposed to. They're supposed to trust Yehovah. So he gets really angry when they go with somebody else. And that's why America is Egypt right now, because we are the guys that they are trusting now, instead of Yehovah. Okay, so we're fulfilling that right now. Okay, verses 17 to 21. War was the business of the great heathen kings. And the siege of Tyre, including building the causeway to the island, had sapped all the profit out of the venture for Nebuchadnezzar. But since Nebuchadnezzar was performing that duty so admirably for Yehovah, even though he didn't know it, excuse me just a minute, please. I'm going to have to give up the mic for just a second. Hold on. Okay. War was a business of the great heathen kings. And the siege of Tyre, including building the causeway to the island, had sapped all of the profit out of the venture. But since Nebuchadnezzar had performed his duty so admirably, Yehovah gave him Egypt as a consolation prize. A worker is worthy of his wages, after all. So, remember in Luke chapter 10 and verse 7, Yeshua said, and in the same house remain, eating and drinking such things as they give, for the laborer is worthy of his hire. Go not from house to house. And Neb had done a good job on Tyre. In that day is an idiom meaning the day of Yehovah. Verse 21 speaks of Mashiach's kingdom, which is a part of the day of Yehovah, the seventh millennium of his creation. The opening of the mouth is something Yehovah eventually gave Moshe as well. It wasn't very long into the wilderness adventure that Moshe found his voice, overcame his fear of looking silly, and said what Yehovah wanted him to say. Moshe spoke the word of Yehovah, and Israel listened. And that's what I have on that portion. Now we're going to move on to Isaiah chapter 42 and verse 8. Isaiah chapter 42. Where are you? Isaiah 42 and verse 8. Where it says, I am Yehovah, that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Look at Genesis chapter 4 and verse 26. It says, and to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enosh, because then began men to call upon the name of Yehovah. When these men called upon the name of Yehovah, they were worshiping pagan gods and calling them Yehovah. The covenant name of Yehovah was being used by heathen, and that passage in Isaiah 42 says, I, Yehovah, that my name and my glory will I not give to another. He will not give his name and he will not give his glory to another, neither his praise to graven images. Okay? And he has done nothing today in all of these passages but set apart his name. I think is the basic idea of what's going on. So, questions or comments on the Haftarah portion or the Torah up to now? No, a telephone call came in for me and I can't take it now because I'm doing this. Okay, questions or comments? Hello, Richard and Betty, if you're coming in here. Messianic Rabbi Ray, hello. It's been a while since I saw you. All right, no questions or comments? Anyone got their hand up? Nobody's got their hand up? Then we shall move on to... Please address why the statement, they shall know that I am Yehovah, is given so often in Ezekiel. Because they don't know, obviously. And they don't know that that's where the judgment is coming from. But when he hits them with it that many times, he's going to hit them with judgment over and over and over again. They'll understand just who Yehovah is. That's what I think that's about. Maybe someone else has a deeper understanding of that, but that's what it looks like to me. Well, you got to remember that in the King James anyway. I don't know if it's it just says I, Yehovah. Okay, it doesn't say I am, but I am is what is basically what it says. So, hard-headed people need to be told over and over again. Tell me about it, Servant 60. You know, a friend of mine tells me that, you know, God usually just needs to use a 2x4 to get to people's attention, but with me, he needed a whole tree. So, yeah, well, that works. Boy, is my neck stiff. Yeah, you better unstiffen that neck there, boy, because Yehovah is going to come down on you if you don't. All right, if there are no questions or comments, we'll move on to the psalm. We're looking at Psalm 44 today. Okay. Moving to Psalm 44. Here we go, starting at verse 1. We have heard with our ears, O Elohim, our fathers have told us, what work thou didst in their days, in the days of old. How thou didst drive out the heathen from thy land, and plantest them. How thou didst afflict the people, and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand, and thine arm, and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. Thou art my king, O Elohim. Command deliverances for Yaakov. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Through thy name will we tread them under that rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, neither will my sword save me. But thou hast saved us from our enemies and hast put them to shame that hated us. In Elohim we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. Selah. But thou hast cast off and put us to shame and goest not forth with our enemies, with our armies. Thou makest us to turn back from the enemy, and they which hate us spoil for themselves. Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat, and hast scattered us among the heathen. Thou sellest thy people for naught, and dost not increase thy wealth at their price. Thou makest us a reproach to our neighbors, a scorn and a derision to them that are around about us. Thou makest us a byword among the heathen, a shaking of the head among the people. My confusion is continually before me, and the shame of my face hath covered me. For the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth, by reason of the enemy and avenger. All this is come upon us, yet have we not forgotten thee, neither have we dealt falsely in thy covenant. Our heart is not turned back, neither have our steps declined from thy way. Though thou hast sore broken us in the place of dragons, and covered us with the shadow of death. If we have forgotten the name of our Elohim, or stretched out our hands to a strange Elohim, shall not Elohim search this out? For he knoweth the hearts, or the secrets of the heart. Yea, for thy sake we are killed all the day long, we are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Awake, why sleepest thou, O Adonai? Arise, cast us not off forever. Wherefore hidest thou thy face, and forgettest our affliction and our oppression? For our soul is bowed down to the dust, our belly cleaveth unto the earth. Arise for our help, and redeem us for thy mercy's sake. That's the end of the psalm. End of that thing was kind of depressing, wasn't it? The fathers in verse 1 are the patriarchs and leaders like Moshe and Yehoshua. The works of Jehovah are well known to Chol Yisrael. His ways? Well, we'll see as the psalm progresses. The heathen were driven out, but not by the strength of the people. Jehovah drove them out of his sight or by his right hand and his stretched out arm, Moshiach. And not by their merit. Jehovah had favor for them, grace. And who is Israel's king and deliverer but Jehovah, mighty to save? And verses 4 through 8 beg the question, is this how we really think about Jehovah? Or is this all for just for show? Verses 9 through 22 put the lie to our attitude in verse 4 through 8. Most believers put on a good game face, but is it really what we live every day? We need to humbly repent of our hypocrisy. We need to come before our Elohim and ask his forgiveness for taking him for granted, in verse 9. We, like the state of Israel, assume that because we are believers, that he'll be our rock and keep us in plenty, even though we have, in our own way, and possibly unbeknownst to us, despised him and made him profane. We think we're doing okay, but all of the curses are coming on us. Meanwhile, he brings affliction to us so that we will come to the end of ourselves and cry out for his deliverance, as Israel did in Egypt. Look at all the exile language in verses 9 through 12. Cast off, put to shame, go out with our armies, go not with our armies, make us turn back from the enemy, scatter us and give us for food, sell us for nothing, make us a reproach, scorn and derision, shame, confusion. Our sin may not be known to us. We think we're keeping his charge, obeying his Torah, but his promises are not forthcoming. We need to ask him to make our sin plain to us. For verse 22 and following show us that if we will acknowledge our sin and ask his deliverance, he will fulfill his promises to us. Look what it says in verse 24 and 25. Wherefore hidest thou thy face, and forgettest our affliction and our oppression? For our soul is bowed down to the dust, our belly cleaveth unto the earth. Arise for our help, and redeem us for thy mercy's sake. We are calling out for his deliverance. And when we do that, when we humble ourselves and call out for his deliverance, he will do it. He's made the promise. Now this psalm ends at that point where David is calling out for his deliverance. I'll bet you in chapter 45 we're going to see his deliverance come. Okay, that's all I've got on the psalm. Are there any questions or comments on the psalm today? Okay. Akushnet Bill, you have a comment and you may have the mic.
Thank you very much. That's an awesome psalm. What the Father says to me in that psalm is his true servants that go about with the office that the Father has given them, doing his work, going into churches and telling them what they're doing wrong. It's a hard thing to do, and it takes confidence. And it takes the Holy Spirit working through you to go in there and tell them in love what they're doing wrong, even though they're not going to hear what you're saying because they're a rebellious house. In other words, the doctrines, the traditions of men that they follow, the flyaway doctrines, Easter, things like that, but not really going up into the gaps to rightly divide the word of truth, listening to the pastors, elders, and priests rather than the word of God, rightly dividing, going, you know, being a workman, seeking the Father with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength. The only way to know him. And I believe that's what that's talking about, where as they go about to the different churches throughout wherever the Father leads them through the Holy Spirit and the tribulation that they go through for doing so. And that's what I believe it's talking about. Again, I thank the Father in Yeshua's precious name. Thank you for letting me share. And I relinquish the mic.
Thank you, Bill. That's very good. There's good comments going on in the text right now, too. Yeshua said, call no man Rabboni, which is exalted master. And that's, by the way, my exalted master. That I at the end of a Hebrew word usually means my. So, you know, you're calling that guy my master. And there's only one master, and that is Yehovah. Okay, are there other questions or comments? We are finished with the Torah, Haftarah, and the Psalms so far, unless there's more there are more comments out there. And I agree with you, once bitten, twice shy. People do love titles. I would just assume that we just loved Yehovah and let the titles go. Anyway, for those of you who were not here at the beginning of the program, we're having a Passover Seder here, and you all are invited. You all are invited for the Passover Seder on April 18th in the evening here in Massillon. If you would think that you might be able to attend, send me an email, mark@ktrone.net. That's mark@ktrone.net. And put in the subject Pesach Seder. And just like Rip just put in the text. And in Ohio, in Massillon, Ohio, northeastern Ohio, near Canton. South of Akron, west of Canton. We went into a Christian church, a very liberal domination of the Christian church at that, and we asked if we could use one of their meeting rooms for our Pesach Seder, and they showed us a room that would hold 70 people and had a nice kitchen attached, and we looked at it and we found a nice Wi-Fi, and hopefully we're going to be able to get that to work this week. Anyway, had a nice Wi-Fi connection on my computer, and we're hoping that we're going to be able to broadcast the thing. While we were there and we're schmoozing with the church secretary, in come these two people, a man and his wife, who are on the planning board, and they introduced themselves, and we introduced ourselves, and church secretary told them we're going to have a Pesach Seder, and these two people looked at each other, and the wife looked at me, and she said, we were planning to have a Pesach Seder, but we don't know the first thing about it. How do we go about it? And I said, well, why don't you come and join us? And so they said, well, that's a great idea, and they started brainstorming there, and I got a call this past Tuesday, the elders meeting was the night before, and the church secretary had brought it to the elders' attention, and the elders said, well, they invited us to their Pesach Seder, and she said yes, and she said, they said, well, we're going to need a bigger room than it's going to hold 70. Let's give them the big room that seats 160, and let's just give it to them instead of charging them for it. And so we've got a really nice venue to have the Pesach Seder in. And so, you know, Yehovah works. You know, he works things out for us. And we're gonna have a wonderful time. I'm really hoping that we can get the internet working well, so that we can broadcast it in this room. And possibly, I have a Ustream page as well. Possibly, we're gonna try to Ustream it if we can. Don't know about that for sure just yet, but that would be a good thing. Yes, Monday night, the 18th of April. That is correct. Yep, and they'll be let to know that, Apple Dumplings. They'll be let to know that. Then it'll be up to them. It'll be them that have to worry about the cursing, not me. We will not be doing drop trial inspections. No, not a chance. And you know, if they say that they're circumcised in heart, I can't check their heart either. You know, it's not something I can do. But I will let them know that, you know, this is a serious thing and not something to be done lightly. So yes, we'll know all about it. They will know all about it anyway. So, are there questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah up to this point? Okay, well then let us move on. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. Have Richard and Betty showed up? They have! Richard and Betty, welcome. Good to see you guys. Maybe you can come to Ohio for the Pesach Seder, eh? Yeah, that would be cool. Anyway. Mark? Someone calling, is the John in the Bible the same as 1-2-3 John? If you're talking about John, the author of the Gospel, yes, it's the same John. Same John that did Revelation as well. Okay. Then let us move on. We're, by the way, speaking of John, we're in Revelation today. Revelation chapter 3. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, we got 3 John 1 through 8. I did not even realize that. I didn't prepare for that. Let's have a look at 3 John. Oh, 3 John. Okay. Let's have a look at it. I'll see if I can comment on it as I go, because I spaced that. Okay, the elder unto the beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Behold, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prosper. That says to me that maybe Gaius was having some physical ailment problems, but his soul was prospering, so that's the most important thing. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which have borne witness of thy charity before the strangers, which have borne witness to thy charity before the church, whom I, if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. Behold that for his name's sake they went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles. Ye therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. We therefore ought to receive such, that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. Obviously, there is somebody traveling through the Gaius's locale, and John is asking him to be sure that they get be taken care of, that their physical needs be taken care of, and possibly that they be helped along. I really don't know what else to tell. I don't have time to actually do any deep study on this right now. So I'm going to move on to Revelation. And chapter 3. And we're going to be talking about the church in Philadelphia. The Kahal in Philadelphia, 7 through, what, 13? Yes. And we're going to read that right now. Wait, well, after I get a sip of something to drink here. And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia, right? These things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the key of David, he that openeth and no man shutteth, and shutteth and no man openeth. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. For thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. And verse 9. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, and to know that I have loved thee. Behold, thou hast kept the word of my patience. I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world, to try them that dwell upon the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my Elohim, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my Elohim, and the name of the city of my Elohim, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my Elohim. And I will write upon him my new name. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the Kahals. Kahalim. Okay, the letter to the Kahal of Philadelphia is the one that has no rebuke. Yohanan says, shows an aspect of Yeshua that harkens back to Yeshayahu 22. In verses 20 through 22 of Yahu 22, it says this: "And it shall come to pass in that day that I will call my servant Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and will clothe him with thy robe, and strengthen him with thy girdle, and I will commit thy government into his hand. And he shall be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. And the key of the house of David will I lay upon his shoulder. So he shall open, and none shall shut, and he shall shut, and none shall open." Eliakim is how that word is written in Hebrew, Eliakim. Eliakim means Yehovah my El rises or sets up. And Hilkiyahu means Yehovah is my portion. I infer that Abba Yehovah's portion is to raise Yeshua, our Master Yehovah, from the dead, and to give him his raiment, gird him for battle, put the government on his shoulder along with the key of David, with which he will be able to open doors or close doors as Yehovah instructs. He has opened a door that no man can shut for those who keep his word and do not deny his name. That last deals with staying faithful to the end, even if it means loss of everything we have on earth, including property, position, or people. The time may come that we will have the choice of denying Yeshua with our words only, and saving our children or grandchildren from death, or standing firm in Mashiach and allowing them to be killed before our eyes. We must stand firm to receive the crown of life. In James chapter 1 and verse 12 it says, "Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried he shall receive the crown of life, which Yehovah hath promised to them that love him." And in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10, where it says, "Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that ye may be tried, and you shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life." Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10. That may be our death, someone else's death, or both. It's our job to be faithful. Yeshua says in Matthew chapter 10 and verses 28 through 33, "Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in Sheol. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall to the ground without your father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows. Whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven." Those are sobering words. Stay faithful. May no one who hears or reads these words falter. May Yehovah strengthen them and us in all adversity. In verses 9 through 13, Yeshua said that he would make those of the synagogue of HaSatan, the assembly of the accuser or adversary, come and worship at the feet of those who would not deny him. A synagogue can be an assembly of people, like a kahal or ecclesia. This one has people who say they are Yehudim, but really are not. Remember Romans chapter 9 and verse 6, where it says, "They are not all Israel who are of Israel. They are not Gentiles, for no Gentile will ever be a Jew. Even those who proselytize and are circumcised into the Jewish religion are never Jews, because the word means Yehudians, men of Yehuda." Yehudians were supposed to have kept Torah and the commandments of Yehovah. These did not. They denied written Torah in favor of oral Torah traditions of men. This is the same fight Yeshua had with the Perushim. These do not live their profession of faith and hold Ephraim and even proselytes as second-class citizens. When Yeshua says that he comes quickly, it does not necessarily mean that he will come soon, but that it will happen suddenly, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, as it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, I believe verse 52. For that reason, we need to hold fast to our profession and stay faithful to it and Him. He comes quickly. That means He's going to come so fast you're not going to recognize it. He'll come in the twinkling of an eye. There's disagreement over who is the bride. Is it all believers or a small remnant of them? That will not be resolved fully until Moshiach comes and tells us that we all had it wrong. But I am certain that at least those that Yeshua refers to as overcomers are of the bride. There are overcomers in every kahal mentioned in Revelation 2 and 3, and they are promised really cool stuff. In Philadelphia, the overcomers are to be made pillars in the temple of the New Jerusalem, never to leave the presence of Yehovah again. Now, people are not going to be made literal pillars of a large building. Paul uses the word to describe the apostles. And when Yaakov, Kepha, and Yochanan, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given unto me, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship, that we should go unto the heathen, and they unto the circumcision. That's in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 9. So this is the same thing, a metaphor for one who is instrumental to the life and ministry there. They do the work of the preparation for the rest to be had there. The overcomer not only gets his own new name written on a white stone, as we saw in chapter 2 and verse 10, I believe, but also he gets three names of Yeshua's. First, the name of Yeshua is Elohim. That's right. Elohim has an Elohim. The name of Abba's city, the New Jerusalem, and Yeshua's own new name, as a wife assumes her husband's name. To be part of his bride will be pretty cool. So stand fast in him, hold fast to that which you have, and be faithful to the end. Do you hear? Shema. Hear. Okay, chapter 14 and verse 1. It is written. 1:4 and verse 1. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written in their foreheads. Tell us where the first place is that those names will be seen. 14:1 tells us exactly where the first place is that those names will be seen, on the Mount Zion, which points us to Obadiah chapter 21, where it says, "And saviors shall come up on Mount Zion to judge the Mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be Jehovah's." The 144,000 are seen as saviors with a minuscule s, so they will help lead the saved through the time of Jacob's trouble. And in Psalm 27 and verse 5 it says, "For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion, in the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me, and he shall set me upon a rock." And then in Isaiah chapter 60 and verse 14 it says, "The sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee shall bow themselves down at the soles of thy feet, and they shall call thee the city of Jehovah, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel." That's all talking about us, or rather, talking about the 144,000. I don't know if it'll be you and me specifically, but the 144,000, that's who that's speaking of. So, are there questions or comments on any of the Torah or the Haftarah or whatever? What does the 10 days refer to, Mark? I think it refers to the 10 days of awe that happened between Yom Teruah and Yom Kippur. That's what I think. That's when the judgments are going to coming down on the earth. That's right. Absolutely. Does it mean to examine ourselves? Yes, you are to keep your accounts short. You know, in the season of Teshuvah begins with Elul 1. That's the month the sixth month, first day of the sixth month. And we're supposed to be examining ourselves during that month so that we'll be ready for Yom Teruah. Yom Teruah is Resurrection Day. And we're supposed to be confessed up before Resurrection Day. Okay, so that we can be delivered out of the wrath of Elohim. The wrath of Yehovah is going to come down, like it says in Revelation chapter 15 and 16. Those last vile judgments are going to take about 10 days to get through. And that's what he's talking about with this 10 days. Okay? So, that's the way I see it anyway. Kushnet Bill, you have a question or a comment. Please come to the mic.
Thank you. Yes, the 144,000 are the ones that kept their spiritual virginity, the redeemed. Those are the ones that listen to the true teachers the Father has sent in these end days, as he said he would. Send teachers that have the truth. In verse 10 of Revelation 3, it says, because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I will also keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. The reason why I believe Philadelphia will not have any trouble at that time is because they won't be sounding the trumpet. John chapter 9 verse 4 says, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. In Luke chapter 12, verse 58, it says, when thou goest with thine adversary to the magistrate, as thou art in the way, give diligence that thou mayest be delivered from him. Lest he hail thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and the officer cast thee into prison. This is what will be happening to Smyrna because of their love for their family and friends during that time. They will still be sounding the trumpet when God has sent all those that do not believe the truth, strong delusion. Says in verse 59, I tell thee, thou shalt not depart thence till thou hast paid the very last money. And for a second witness to that would be Matthew 5, verse 25. Agree with thine adversary quickly while thou hast out in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Said quickly too, in other words, don't end in hard, just quickly. Amos chapter 5 verse 13, it says, therefore the prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time. Another verse would be 27. Psalm 27 verse 5. For in the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me up upon a rock. In other words, at that time, what I believe the Father is saying for the Church of Philadelphia is just be quiet and wait for the true Christ to come, when nobody will have to tell you. In a twinkling of an eye, we will all know. Another interesting book and chapter on this would be 2 Kings chapter 5 with Naaman the leper, starting verse 15. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him and said, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. But he said, as the Lord liveth before whom I stand, I will receive none. and he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth, for thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In verse 18 it says, and this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing? And he said unto him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. And the word peace in the Hebrew means safe, well, happy, friendly, rest, all is well, expatio, holy. In Romans chapter 13, explains this. Like when Satan is here, proclaiming to be the Messiah, God is the one, it says in Romans 13, verse 1, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. In other words, God uses Satan as the negative part of his plan for those that don't follow the Father's word pertaining to end times and what we're talking about. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Again, the negative part of the Father's plan. Wherefore ye must needs be subject not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. In other words, when Satan is here, you're not to fight him. He is here because God has ordained him to be. But you don't go out working for him. That's the mark of the beast, going out and get converts and all that. You just wait patiently for the true Christ to return. I believe it is a 5-month period. It got shortened because he's so convincing at what he's going to do that if the time wasn't shortened, as Jesus said, even the very elect, if it were possible, would be deceived. Revelation 9 pertains to that time, I believe, the 5-month period, which connects as well to the flood of Noah's time. And Jesus said it will be as the days of Noah, which has two thoughts for myself on this, is that the angels will be cast out, just like the angels that left their natural habitation in Genesis 6. And the flood will be the flood of lies spoken of in Revelation 12, verse 15, by Satan proclaiming to be the Messiah and then exalting himself above all that is called God to show himself that he is God. And when that takes place, very, very, you won't need nothing at that point, as it says in the scriptures, because Jesus Christ will be returning momentarily. Oh, praise the Lord in Yeshua's precious name. That's what I believe to be true pertaining to Philadelphia. So Smyrna or Philadelphia, they kind of go on. Smyrna, it's a different calling. Someone has to be delivered up for a testimony. But they're kind of like a Peter. They're going against the Father's plan. But the Philadelphia church, which is the ones that Zadok, the holy priesthood, spoken of in Ezekiel 44, verse 15, throughout that chapter, will be the ones that will be in the inner sanctum with Yeshua when he reigns on the earth. And thank you so much. I thank the Father in Yeshua's precious name and relinquish the mic.
Thanks very much, Bill. Appreciate that. Are there any other questions or comments out there? There was some discussion about the seven churches of Revelation and how they necessarily are. You know, that's been taught very different ways in the church about what those seven churches represent. They could represent time periods in the church, in church history. I don't think that they're necessarily that only one of those representations was available at any one time, but that over history, since the time that John wrote that book, that there were times when that all of those were represented at all times, but that one may have been more prevalent at the time. I believe that the one in the church in Smyrna, I think it was, the Kahal in Smyrna, didn't have any active rebukes against it either. But that was basically thought of as the time of the martyrdom of the early church. It's a possibility. But what was described in each of those things was a specific spirit, and it was a spirit of that particular group of individuals. And I really think, you know, it came upon me as Bill came to the mic just a few minutes ago, that the 144,000 really and truly do represent the church in Philadelphia. Okay? There's no rebuke to be had by any of those people. And there's no rebuke to be had by these Philadelphians. Now, as those people who believe that those represent specific ages, that puts us in the Laodicean age. And for certain, the spirit that is most prevalent among believers nowadays, or professed believers nowadays, is very lukewarm. It is definitely Laodicea. So, but in the meanwhile, there are groups of people who are Philadelphian. There are groups of people like the believers in Darfur right now who are having their heads whacked off by the Muslim beast system, that those people are the Smyrna types. Okay, so I mean that these things have been going on. All of those things have been going on all the time of the last 2,000 years. But there are times when the one is more prevalent than the other, and I believe that that's the way that goes. Oh, the Western world is definitely spoiled. Definitely spoiled. And we seem to think that the Western world of unbelievers seems to think that they're going to be the ones running the New World Order. And I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen that way. There's going to be, there are three beast systems. There's going to be the political beast system. What are the people chopping off heads prove? Just saying that they're chopping off heads. They're sending people. You know, they think that when they blow themselves up in service to their God with a small G, that they're going to be rewarded in the afterlife. Well, they're going to be rewarded with some really wicked judgment in the afterlife. but they think they're going to get, you know, 72 virgins and 72 bedrooms and 72 mansions and 72, you know, I mean, it goes on and on and on, 72 times or whatever. Which is a load of hooey. But they seem to believe it because they, you know, they're willing to give up their lives to kill a few other people. Anyway, the Christian martyrs in Darfur, those who are standing firm for the name of Messiah, even if it's a false name, Yeshua, I'm sorry, the false name Jesus, the Messiah that they're following is Yeshua, okay? And they're following him to the end. They're holding fast until the end. And they're the ones that we need to model ourselves after when the time comes, because the time will come that we're going to have to make the choice. What are they proving? They're proving that those people whose heads they're chopping off are better men than they. That's what they're proving. Let's see. Other questions or comments? Does anyone would anyone like to take the mic? They're proving who the real creator Elohim is. That's what they're proving. Yeah, there are three New World Order systems. There is the political system that is that's run out of Great Britain and America, the United States of America. There is the economic system. Sorry, the economic system runs out of Great Britain and America. There is that's the Western New World Order. Then there is the what would you say, the vast majority of the people in the Eastern New World Order, that is mainly China and the kings of the East, and that I believe also includes Russia. And then there's the Southern New World Order, and that is Islam. Three different systems, and the religious system is, I believe, Islam. And boy, I'll tell you, and you know, the economic system is slowly moving to the east. China is and Japan are the strongest economies in the world right now, I think. And so that's what I think is going on. We have the political system that's running out of Egypt, the economic system that will be running out of Peking, and the religious system will be running out of, I think, Tehran. So anyway, each one of them is vying for to be the power, and it's not working that way. Anyway, other questions or comments? Things are going to get worse and uglier before they get better. Does the IMF run the whole economic system? They might, but everything is moving towards China. What do you mean the people of Wisconsin are truly having their say? What are we talking about? I don't get to see the news very much. Oh, the union protest? Yeah, I heard a little bit about that. Government trying to break up unions. The state government trying to break up the unions, yeah. Well, and that's the unions that have to do with the state government are trying to break the state government unions. I just heard a little bit of a talk show yesterday. I didn't hear anything about the what's going on there, really, other than that the governor is trying to break the back of the union because one in particular that they were talking about was the bus drivers. I forget even who the talk show host was, but The bus drivers in Addison, Wisconsin, make as much as $160,000 a year for driving a bus. Do you understand that? And that's incredible. What a pension plan. Wow. That's just great. Those guys are not middle class, as far as I'm concerned. Okay? I mean, my family made about $50,000 a couple of years ago before I got hit with the tree, the year before I got hit with the tree. We made about 50 grand, and I thought of us as being middle class. Okay? I was living pretty well. So, we didn't do that well last year. But in the meanwhile, these guys are making 160 grand a year, and they're complaining about, you know, we're the middle class. You know, you're trying to destroy the middle class. No, we're trying to keep the government going. We can't afford to pay this kind of money. That's what the deal is. And they don't seem to get it. No, I want mine. The whole collective bargaining thing has gotten way out of hand. Not that it didn't have its place, but it has gotten way out of hand. The money kings did invent the IMF and the World Bank and the UN. You're absolutely correct. And that's the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and those people. Yes, they did. The Carnegies. Yeah. That was for you there, Z. Miller. The Carnegies. Anyway, are there other questions or comments on the Torah, the Haftarah? The Bilderbergers? There's no U in that. Lieb, Bear Stearns. Yeah, exactly. Those are the people. Yeah, and you know what? Why should the bus drivers be making three times what teachers are making? You know, if you want to weigh the worth of their contribution, teachers should be doing a whole lot more for the society than are some bus drivers. You know, I mean, we could live without bus drivers. We could actually live without teachers too. Actually, it'd be better if we didn't have a teachers union either. But where is here? Take Sisti, Idaho. They make 150 grand to start? Man, I gotta move there. Wow. That's nice money. I don't suppose Torah teachers get that kind of money, do they? Well, if they'd pay in silver, that would be good money. Anyway, if there are no more questions or comments, with trees. Or tornadoes, like Michael got hit last April. So, that's all right. You're allowed to make jokes like that. At my expense, it's not a problem. Michael Clayton got hit with a tornado like 3 weeks after I got hit with the tree. And Hasatan was going after Torah teachers last year. He started at the lower rung and started moving up the ladder. And he didn't get the money yet that I know of. But anyway, if there are no more questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah or the Psalm or the Book of Revelation, we're going to call this here Midrash at a close. Have FT, or Dumrod rather, shut off his recording. And you're all welcome. And we're open for some questions or comments on anything, really, pretty much. We've already been talking about the political situation in Wisconsin. Okay. Oh, you all are welcome. Believe me, it's my pleasure to come out and do this. By the way, does that mean that I'm breaking Torah because I'm doing my pleasure on the Sabbath? I don't know. Patty by Grace, you want the mic? You may come and have it. Take it away, boy.
Mark, you ain't going to believe what my wife just said about you after you said that. I'm going to tell on you. I have a question. I've been doing a study with some guy who is totally against Saturday Sabbath. You know, it's one of those things. And I've covered pretty much everything with him. He keeps bringing up the old one, Colossians 2:16-17. Can anybody tackle this a little bit for me and see if there's anything I've missed on it? Maybe bring up something new that I can't get through to this guy. And, you know, I know there are some times you just got to let it go, but this kid has got everything else right. He just can't get over the Sabbath thing. And, you know, yeah, you know me. I'll beat a horse until he's not only dead, but he's dry bones, okay? So, if you can add anything to what I've already said, that's true, Grace Neal. I agree. Yeah, I know you know that I know that you know. So, anyway, go ahead.
Hey, go for it, Mashiach, now. You're up. You said Colossians 1:16-17, right?
2, I think he means. But very simply, it's the context is the answer. Before verse 16, it's talking about rudiments of the world, commandments, traditions of men. After verse 16, it's doing the same. We've got, in effect, a sandwich here. And if you just have him look at the context, it's not talking about the Torah or anything Jewish or anything else for that matter. It's not talking about the stock market either.
Also, I don't know if you see this, but in verse 17 it says, which are the shadow of things to come, but the body is of Messiah. That word is not there. Okay? Now, if we take verse 16-17 and we read that, it says, let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of an holy day or of a new moon or of the Sabbath, which are shadow of things to come. Not things that have been, but things to come. But the body is Messiah. I'm sorry, the body of Messiah. It says, don't let any man judge you. Let the body of Messiah judge you. Okay? So, that's one of the most important things there. The body of Messiah is the one that judges, not just anybody. And also we have, it is the shadow of things to come. Okay? It's not shadow of things that have been. So, and you're right. Your average Christian just won't see it. It's not that they can't see it. It's that they won't see it. I mean, it's plain as the nose on your face. Well, as plain as the nose on my face, it's pretty plain. I'm here to tell you. Patty, come on back.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of those guys that'll just keep going and keep going. I'm going to tell you, Mark, and you all know this if you're on Facebook, they'll only allow you to put 8,000 words in a post in one thing. I had to split one of my posts up to him in 6 different posts, just one article. Now, you think about that. That's 48,000 characters. Ay vey. Yeah. So this is like my 4th post to this guy, so I'm probably pushing 60,000 to him right now. And he's being very stiff-necked. The last one I put out to him, though, if he doesn't cover it after that, I will try and tackle that, what you spoke about there in 17. Then I'm just going to shake the dust. Because, you know, let's face it, yes, there are, Rip. Yeah, that's all I can do is shake off the dust and move on. He comes off sounding real genuine. And he's got everything else going for him, you know. I just can't seem to get him out of that. Well, maybe if I don't know. I know his mom. I can tell his mom on him. She'll take a stick to him. Oh, well. But, you know, something just tells me to keep trying. So, yeah, and that's the other thing, too. I mean, I've thrown enough seeds in this guy. He's going to have to dig his way out. Well, I haven't talked to him about that, Grace Hill. I don't know if he is or not. So, yeah, well, that's it. Well, you know, I had another guy a long time ago where I was having an argument with him on something. I can't even remember what it was. It was so long ago. It wasn't an argument. It was a discussion. We had a friendly discussion going. And I finally just gave up on him. And 2 weeks later, he got saved, so figure it out. Sometimes you just got to let go and let God take care of it. They tremble at losing their salvation by being under the law. Yeah, you know the one biggest thing I've noticed is there is such a confusion over this. You know, I ain't following all those 613 laws. I said, I ain't talking about the laws. I'm talking about the Ten Commandments. You know, they just don't seem to get it. And because I'm relatively new at this, I'm very stubborn. I figure I'm gonna solve all of these theological debates. Yeah, it's a control issue on my part. We found that out about me here just this week. I'm sure you all have known it for quite some time. Well, yeah, that's true, Addie. You know what? I have learned a lot. Could be that you're going. It's possible there. It's very true that throughout all of this, it has caused me to study a lot. And one thing I did learn years ago, my first pastor, you know, I knew absolutely nothing. Okay, and when I started going to his church, I was there for about 6 weeks. And you know what job he gave me to do? Teaching the kiddies. Ages about 7 up to about 12, I guess. 11 or 12. And I'll tell you what, if you ever want to learn scripture real quick, that's the group of that you want to have. Yeah, because those kids will ask you all kinds of questions, and you bet if you don't know, you better bone up real quick. But yeah, I've learned a lot through this guy. You need a daycare? No thanks. Been there, done that. I got two here right now, Keeps. I don't need any more. Is she a Sunday school teacher? I bet she just loves it. I got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. They ask the best questions, Miller. They really make you think. And I'll tell you what, I learned more in that 6 months than I ever did for the rest of my time. They really make you learn. Babes will ask the best question. I'm not talking about babes in Christ. I mean real babes. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, look out. Anyway, thanks for your help. I'm going to remember that, and maybe, you know, if he asks any more, I don't know. It's going to take him a week to read what I just gave him. So, all right, y'all take care. Oh, I've been kind of sitting on the side because I got a cold in my nose, so I haven't been on here much. But I've been sitting here listening to you, Mark. Really, I have.
Okie dokie. Skiing, Mark? Not me, Mark. Must be talking to somebody else. Yeah, Jono does not go out live anymore. He records an interview, and then he puts it out on the internet. He's got, there's a, I think it's Solace Radio, who is right now talking Torah. But I believe it's Solace Radio that he runs it on. And he's got, you know, a couple of places where he posts all of his interviews. And I don't even look for him anymore. I just have a thing where I download all of his things that are set as podcasts at iTunes. So anyway, he does have some really good interviews, and we've been having some conversations this past week. And I'm just curious what he's going to be asking me about on the mic. Birds are still falling out of the sky. Is that right? I have not seen any of that, so. Is the sky falling too? No, it's not Chicken Little. This is literally, no, the birds were flying out of the sky like a month ago. And it was all the news for 3 or 4 days, so they could cover something else up, you know. And now it's happening so frequently that they're not even covering it anymore. It's just, oh, look, more birds falling out of the sky. Oh, look, more fish washing up on the shore. Yeah, that's right. It was a Karen Carpenter song. Why do birds fall out of the sky? Anyway, are there other questions or comments out there? Any other, we can go of a general nature or anything that has to do with what we did today? State of Ohio, state of confusion. Servant 60, you have a question or a comment. Come on, let's hear it.
Mark, I don't know exactly where it's at, but it says something about, like I said, I don't know where it's at, that since we're under grace, we're no longer under the law. I can't remember exactly. I know it's in the New Testament, but I'm not sure exactly where it's at. I have a question on that, and I need to have a thorough understanding of that so I can surely rest assured other people's minds. Just an insight. If you know where it's at, I need to do a little more studying on it. Thank you, and I'll release the mic.
Romans 6:15. Romans 6:14 and 15, actually. But for sin shall not have dominion over you, for ye are not under the law, but under grace. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under the law, but under grace? Elohim forbid. Under law, I believe, under law is talking about those who, they live a sinful lifestyle, okay? And they are judged according to the law. Those who know the law, but by the way, Romans chapter 2, I think it is. Hang on a minute. Romans is a cool book. I like Romans. I forgot where I was going now. Tree-addled brain. Sorry. Under law. It's not coming back now. Yeah, let's go on sinning because we're not under legalism but under grace. Heaven forbid. Ain't it the truth, though? You are not under law, but under grace. Actually, you know what? The Romans chapter 1 is an introduction. Starting in chapter 2 and going through to chapter 7. Take it back. Through chapter 7 is basically focused on the Jews in the Kahal in Rome. Then there's a transition period between chapter 7 and chapter 8, And beginning with chapter 9, it's mostly pointed at the Gentiles, in the written to the Gentiles, rather, in Rome. And so you look at chapter 6, and it's talking about not being under law. You know, Paul talks about at least three different kinds of law. You know, he talks about Torah, the, you know, the books of Moshe. He talks about the oral traditions. And he talks about civil law. So in Romans chapter 2 and verse 12, what is that? Let me look that up. That might be it. That might be what I'm thinking of. Hang on. I got to find it. Romans 2, verse 12. For as many as have sinned without law also... Yes, that was what I was where I was going. As many as have sinned without law are subject to it. Or perish without the law, rather. And those who are have sinned under the law are judged by the law. That's what it is. So if you've been sinning without having the law, the knowledge of the law, then you just perish. Okay? If you have the law, the Torah, and you sin under it, then you are judged according to the Torah. And now, the Torah covers a lot of things, and one of the things it covers is the atonement of, in particular at the time, blood sacrifices. Okay, and you know that was the atonement was taken care of by Yeshua on the tree at Pesach time, out of time. But you know, if you are living with a knowledge of Torah, then if you have the knowledge of Torah, then you know when you have sinned, and you can go and take the offerings that are required, and you can be blameless under Torah as well. No one except for Yeshua was ever innocent under Torah, but many people were blameless under Torah. Okay? And I believe that that's what we're talking about when we're talking about being under grace and under Torah. We have always been had a gracious provision, always, even before Yeshua died. We had a gracious provision, and that was the substitutionary sacrifices. Okay? Now, in the millennial kingdom, there's going to be a new temple, and there are going to be offerings made there, blood offerings made there. It's not because we need to worry about atoning for those who are in Messiah, but those who go on to populate that millennium will not all be in Messiah. Many of them will be lost. And when they sin, they're going to have to bring an offering. There are also going to be free will offerings that we can partake in. I shouldn't say we, those of us who are alive now, when that comes about, when Messiah is in his kingdom, we will be in resurrected bodies. We won't be offering sacrifices at all. But those people who go on to populate the millennium, who are born again, okay, and there will be a few of them, they'll be offering free will offerings. Okay? That's what those things are there for. The law does two things. It either, if you live according to it, then you get all the blessings of it. And if you live not according to it, you get all the curses of it. Okay? It will either bless you or it will curse you. And that's what Torah is about. Those are its two jobs. Servant 60, you have your hand up. I don't know if you've had it up there for a long time or not. I've been kind of looking away. Anyway, you may have the mic.
When you were talking about that we will have our resurrected bodies, and those, you say those in the millennium, some will be lost. will we at this time with our resurrected bodies, will we at this time, will we be teaching the lost, or I'm not sure how that works. Oh, okay. We will be teaching the lost. Okay. Will some of us, will some of them, will they believe us, or will they not believe us, or will they just continue, some of them that are lost will continue to be lost, or what? I'm not sure. Anyway, I release the mic.
Those of us who will be in the resurrection bodies will be, our ministry is going to be to be the rod of iron. Okay, we're gonna be out. At least I think we're gonna be out among the people. We will be teaching them Torah. We will be holding them to account under Torah. Those who go into the thing as believers, and there will be a few of those who will go into the millennium as believers, and there will be many of them who go into the millennium as unbelievers. We'll be teaching Torah to all of them. Some will accept and believe it. Some will not. Vast majority will not. Because at the end of the millennium, there's going to be a huge gathering of people that are coming against Messiah, against Jerusalem, and against the camp of the saints, that final Sukkot. That's what I think it is anyway. And only those who are in that camp will be saved through the Great White Throne and on into the new heavens and new earth. But the same kind of thing is going to happen during Armageddon. There are going to be believers. I truly believe that it's going to be that the leaders of that group are going to be the Orthodox rabbis who are going to call out for Yehovah's deliverance when they finally come to the end of themselves, and Yehovah is going to answer immediately with Messiah, who will be coming through the clouds, and they'll look up and see him, and they'll say, oh my, did I ever make a mistake? And they'll recognize that this is Yeshua, and that he is Messiah. And that's the point where those people are going to go on into the millennium. And they'll be the believers that go into the millennium. Kohanim, priests, and authority to teach will return to the Levim, away from the rabbis. Actually, many rabbis will be doing this as well. They will come to the realization very quickly that they've been leading people astray with their oral law. And they'll get back to the Torah. They understand Torah very, very well. That's one of the reasons that I resort to them in my research for the Torah portion. They understand Torah. Now they more trust the oral traditions than they do the Torah, and that makes me crazy. But they understand Torah, and they can give us a lot of insight into that thing. That's what you're asking. What? What? What are we asking, Daryl and Yah? Do you believe there will be marriages in the kingdom? Absolutely. There are going to be marriages in the kingdom. Your wife wants to know. That there won't be marriage in the kingdom? No, there won't. In the resurrection, there will be no marrying and giving in marriage. It doesn't say that about the kingdom. It says that about in the resurrection. Because your resurrection body will not reproduce. Okay? Other than reproducing spiritually. Because you're going to be teaching people Torah. Oh, good answer. You like that, huh? Okay. Servant 60, you may have the mic again.
Oh, sorry for the multiple questions, Mark. There's thousands of them, but I'm not going to ask you but one more. I know that those that have resurrected bodies will be teaching those that are lost and in the kingdom. But there is also a passage or in scripture saying that Yeshua will, but that God will have the law written on our hearts. Now, there's a time element here. I don't know which is which. Will everyone now or soon will have the law written in their heart, or is this after or what? I'm not sure. Anyway, I release the mic, and that's the last of my question. Sorry for asking so much.
Okay, at this particular time, wait a minute. At this particular time, we are partakers in the new covenant. Okay? We are having the Torah written on our hearts as we study it. Okay? The new covenant doesn't come into full effect until Ephraim and Judah come together. Okay? If you look at that new covenant in Jeremiah chapter 31, it says that the covenant is made with Judah and with Israel and with no one else. Now, Judah and Israel aren't necessarily just descendants of Jacob, okay? Gentiles who have no Israelite blood in them whatsoever can also partake in the new covenant by engrafting, okay? As we are engrafted back into the cultivated olive tree, us wild branches cultivated back into the cultivated olive tree, and partaking of the root of Messiah. Okay, we all do that. Okay, there are some of us who are descendants of Israel, the 10 northern tribes. Where was I going? I forget. Tree-addled brain. The new covenant. The new covenant is with Israel and with Judah, and those people who are engrafted into the commonwealth. It is not in full effect now. Okay? Just not. It will be in the millennial time and in the future, in the new heaven and new earth. Okay. Other question? Exactly. Bill, are you talking about me? Okay, good. Servant 60, you have another question or comment. Good, come on.
I'm sorry, Mark. Darn it. I got a brain freeze, too. Gee whiz. Mark, I'm at a loss for words. I forgot what I was going to ask you. I'm sorry. Perhaps maybe next week, if God willing, I'll remember it.
Obviously, you forgot to... Oh, wait a minute. I just lost you now. Servant 60, you're way down here. There you are. Let me take the red dot off you now. You forgot that you had the mic. Okay. Acushnet Bill, you had your hand up. Go for it. Take the mic.
Thank you very much. Yes, exactly the way you had said it. I agree completely. Just one thing I wasn't quite sure on, though. What I believe at the seventh trump when Jesus returns, that everybody will be changed from their flesh bodies to their spiritual bodies, but some in other words, our corruptible flesh body will go to incorruptible spiritual body. But those that are not in the first resurrection, they will be still mortal, meaning liable to die. But those that overcome, that will be teaching during the millennial reign, are the ones that will be immortal, which means deathlessness. And just like when Jesus went to the prisoners after he was crucified, the Old Testament saints that could not live by the law and went and preached to the spirits there, the same ones that rose out of the graves in Matthew 27, verse 50 through 54. But I do believe that we will all be in our spiritual bodies when Jesus returns to teach. But after that 1,000 years, just like you said, while Satan is bound at time with no influence, it'll be an awesome time of teaching. It's amazing though, but when he's let loose for that short season, that they will come against the camp of the saints like the sands of the sea. Which is fine because, that way they're making their own choice. There'll be no more faith because everybody will know the truth completely. And all those that do not love the Lord, will not be. They will be turned to ashes like Malachi chapter 4, blotted out and taken out of the memory of all those that do love the Father. So there'll be no sadness in the kingdom. It'll be like it never happened. It'll be an agape love fest for eternity. That's what I believe to be true. I thank the Father in Yeshua's precious name. And relinquish the mic.
Yep, you are right. That was very, very good, Acushnet Bill. Addy 1950, you may have the mic.
Thank you, sir. I just have one question, and that is, I was in the Horror Keeper's room, I think that's, if I remember Nick right, and after Monty Judah's teaching, there was another recording of another guy that was teaching, and he was super good, but I don't know his name. Does anybody know his name?
Does anybody have that name? David Matthews? Dave Matthews, the guitar player? Perhaps it was Bill Cloud. Oh, it could have been Bill Cloud. That's a good possibility. Zesty Zinger, you have your hand up, and you may have the mic.
Thank you, sir. I ain't up for any ecumenical debate, but now I would ask, in the opinion of anyone in this room, you can put it in text. You don't have to or PM me if you want. What is your, to you, the most moving and the most, how do I say this, to be exact, the most relevant version of the biblical text? You know, like you say, it's the same, you know, the St. James Version, the New International Version, or whatever. I would like to hear from people, because now I'm picking up out of Bible, and I got a couple of Bibles, I understand, but I'm asking you, as a brother, what do you hold sacred as your text? What do you look at, you know, to give you inspiration, motivation, if I may. Thank you, brother. Okay. Mic is free.
Personally, I have grown up with the King James, and I understand what it means when it talks. Okay, I like the language of it. I don't like some of the translation, but I do like the language of it. I think it's a very precise English. And I really and truly like that thing. When it uses a second person pronoun, you know what they're talking about. In all of the other versions, all it uses is you and your. And it can mean first person, second person plural, I mean second person singular. Who knows? You can't tell by just looking at what's there. But in the King James, you can tell because they use thee and thy, ye and your. Okay? And it makes it very simple for me. And I need things simple. I love the AENT, the Aramaic English New Testament. Very, very good translation. I like Moshe Konyakowski's Restoration Scriptures. Very good stuff. Okay? I work out of the King James, though. It's almost the only thing. I refer to the other things mainly looking for when I'm getting ready to do a midrash, I'm looking for other people's opinions about what the text means. And sometimes I use it and sometimes I don't. I really like the Aramaic English New Testament. I like it enough. It's the first thing I ever had by Andrew Gabriel Roth. I like it enough that I went and bought a copy of Wheel of Stars, which is his take on the biblical calendar. And it's a really good, really deep study into the calendar. Do you know that he found that there are four different calendars that the Hebrews used? Four different calendars? And they all had to work together in order to make everything work properly, to keep all the days straight. So what concerns me is, can an average reader spot the errors being made in a version like Konyakowski's? The average reader, probably not. I mean, somebody who is brand new to the scripture is probably not going to see all the stuff that... And you know, Konyakowski doesn't make that many mistakes in his translations anyway. Konyakowski's is basically a restored name King James. You know, there's very little that he changed in that thing. But you know, I like the idea of using the Hebrew theological terms like chesed instead of grace and rohama instead of mercy, you know, and other things like that. Say, you know, those are things that we need to get used to, because those are theological terms that really mean something, you know. Commentaries suck dirt. Laugh out loud. Yes, well, yeah, they kind of do, some of them. But you know what? I still refer to some Christian commentaries as well, because you know, not everything that they said, just because they're Christians, doesn't mean that they're always wrong. You know, just like I look at the Chumash and the rabbinic commentaries, because they're rabbis doesn't mean that they're wrong. I like John Gill's commentary, Patty by Grace. I used to look at that a lot when I was doing the Christian stuff anyway. And I think that still has a lot of relevance. You know, I got on you on Facebook, lightly about the Dispensational Truth by Clarence Larkin. You remember that. But I wasn't really getting on you about it. It's just that it's something that I relied on quite a bit when I was teaching in the church. And yeah, exactly. So it was he didn't go far enough. He didn't go far enough in a lot of stuff, and he was really heavy on the dispensational stuff. And I mean, that was his main gig. And I need to be careful about, as I asked you, if you're into dispensations, are you also into Constantinian? You know, I mean, and I was kidding when I said that, but I think you took offense. Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It was being that you're new to the non-dispensational, non-Constantinian stuff. You saw that and said, this is a really good representation of the kingdom, that you know, the land grant. From Larkin's limited perspective, yeah, it was. You know, it was from the Euphrates to the Mediterranean. But it didn't take into account everything to the north and south. You know, it was just a cut-off version. It was like it had a clamper and a clipper on an electronic circuit. You know, clamping it at the top and clipping it at the bottom so that you had a nice straight line, you know. And things just don't work that way in real life. And so I tried to gently correct it, and I didn't mean to be nasty to you or nothing, but it seemed like that's the way it came out. Anyway, you may have the mic now, Pity by Grace.
That's okay, Mark. Hey, I got a tough hide. I'm just going, where the heck is he getting this from? I mean, when you're a newbie and somebody comes up to you and says, what are you, a dispensational Constantinianist, you go, what? Because me and the RCC do not get along well. Addy knows. No, it's okay. Yeah, now that I know what kind of a person you are, I'm going to be a little more careful when you say something to me. I'm going to go, oh, okay, he's pulling my leg again. That caught me off guard, though. But, you know, after you said that, I started digging on Larkin. See, I never knew this guy. And, you know, when I posted that link for that, I didn't even see it, but his name was right there in the link. So I got to doing some checking. You were right. He cut Israel off kind of short, okay? I got to looking at the boundary lines as God laid them down. You're an anti-dispensational Constantinian. You know, that's almost hard. Oh, man. But... I got to looking at the descriptions as laid out to Abraham from Yahweh, and he cut him off short. Here was my thinking on it. When I saw that map of Larkin's, any time that I see something that kind of puts one over on the Arabs and gives it and gives more land to the Jews, I'm all for it, you know, because I'm, hey, give it all to them. I mean, let's just back everyone up about 2,000 miles and give them all. Yeah. So I got to checking. Yeah, he cut it off short. Way short, especially on the north part. And I always thought that the Sinai was a part of what was given to him. And I think that is the way it is. So, yeah, you know. And it may end up back that way if things keep going the way it is down there with... the Suez and Egypt and all their uprising and stuff. It may go back to the way it was. But I'm kind of wanting to sit here and listen to Eddie today because there's been a lot happened this week. And I even got my wife interested. You know, so... but no worries about what happened on Facebook. I'm just sitting there going, what? You know, I think I was half brain dead when you did that to me. You caught me off guard. I'll be watching you now, man. You can bet on it. Oh, jeez. I was just sitting there going, what did I do? All right. I'm going to get me something to eat because Eddie's about to start, and I like to eat through the first half. The five-minute update that's never been 5 minutes ever. So I can eat a full dinner by the time I'm waiting for him to finish up. And then I am going to take my Sabbath rest, because I'm going to do a nap. Maybe I can shed some more of this cold. Y'all go ahead. And shalom, everybody. I've had a great time in here today, just sitting back listening. So, I'll see you over there. You going to keep the room open again so that we can come over here and discuss if we want? Eddie isn't here. Eddie's in his own room. HHMI. What's it called? I forget his name. What's the name of his room? Somebody help me. Hang on. I think I got it here somewhere. Beit Yaakov. There you go. I pronounce as bait. Kind of reminds me of fishing. Beit Yaakov. All right. Mike, yours.
All right. Thanks, Patty. Yes, Eddie's five-minute update today will be quite important. all the stuff that's going on. Do you realize that the former Tunisian president is in a coma? Mubarak is said that he may be in a coma. I think that somebody is poisoning these guys. And I think that it has to do with the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood. I hate to call them Muslim because they like to be called Muslim. They're Muslims. They've always been Muslims since the 7th century. It really bugs me. Yeah, it's very suspicious of the stuff that's going on. Muslim Brotherhood. There you go. Thank you, Shavuotos. I'm going to use that one. The Mausoleum. That's Mausoleum. Beautiful. Yeah, because that's exactly what it is. It is absolutely death. Anyway, the Muslim Brotherhood has been in the pocket of Iran and the Ayatollahs over there for 30 years, and they've been working behind the scenes, and now they're slapping the whole area down, and they're trying to completely surround Israel. And if the Muslim Brotherhood surrounds Israel, that means that Iran has surrounded Israel. Okay? And what are we doing as the United States? Sitting back and watching it happen and kind of cheering them on. Okay? As the United States government. I think it's... Yes, the Mausoleum Brotherhood does practice Sharia law. They're all about it. They're all about Sharia law. Are there other questions or comments? That is Obama's job. Obama's job is to sit back and do nothing. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm going to give this over to Rip. He's got about 15 minutes to play some music or something. And then Eddie will be on, I think, probably. Let's see, is Jocelyn online yet? I don't think so. Oh, yes, she is. Jocelyn is online. So more than likely, the room is open over there. So I'm going to open that room for myself, and I'm going to shut the mic off. Oh, Eddie, you may have the mic. Go for it.
Yeah, I just heard day before yesterday that the Muslim Brotherhood is Shiite Muslim. So if they take over in Egypt, then you've got the Shiites in Iran joining forces with the Shiites in Egypt, and you have the whole Egyptian military equipment that we've sold them being able to be used against Israel. And day before yesterday, Jordan started cracking on Israel too. And if the Iranian warships are just now getting permission to go through the Suez Canal and into the Mediterranean, so you will have Shiites on every position around, totally surrounding Israel once those warships are in place. It's absolutely amazing times we live in. Look up, our redemption draweth nigh.
Yes, only Saudi Arabia and Jordan will not be Shiite if what's going on right now stands. And I heard a report last week that King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia was dead. That he died, he had a heart attack after arguing with Barack Obama about the situation in Egypt. And I posted it on Facebook. I don't remember. They will not confirm it. They will not confirm it, because if they do, that's really going to send some shockwaves through the world. Because Saudi Arabia right now and Jordan are the only ones that are not under Shiite control. Okay? They are all that's left of the Sunnis. And the Sunnis, as whacked out as they are moderate by comparison. I get email from people, and I use a lot of different websites. Let me see if I can find that one again. I don't remember what it was right offhand. Let me, I need to get on my, let's see, find real news. No, I don't remember what the news thing was now. I have to go to, way back into my Facebook post. It was a couple of days ago that I posted it, so it's a couple of pages back. Sorry, but I if you go to my Facebook page and you page your way back, you will find a thing where it was a business report, and they were making a big deal about it. But it never hit the major media, and no one will confirm or deny. Business Insider, yes, that's it. Business Insider, Abdullah dies. That's exactly it. Rip just put it in the thing. That's it. It's a short article, but it was enough to make my eyes water. Now, there's also a King Abdullah in Jordan, but this is the King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia. He's 86 years old. He was in the United States for an operation. And he had just gone home, and he was on the phone with Barack Obama, and they were arguing because Obama was all for Egypt falling, and Saudi was not. So, as of right now, only the Saudis and the Jordanians are not in Shiite control. It's getting really bad. Addy, 1950, you may have the mic back.
Well, can you imagine how betrayed he must have felt? You know, it was the Saudis that sent Obama to Harvard, paid his tuition in Harvard, got him put in the White House to sit back, you know, and fulfill the Muslim will, and then to have him turn on Mubarak like he did, the Saudi king must have been, "What the heck are you doing? We bought you, boy! And you turned on us." So I can see where he would be real, real upset.
Yep, he was also the first Muslim king to whom Peebo bowed. Yeah, exactly right. Rip, I'm going to pass the mic over to you. Give us about 7 or 8 minutes of music and then shut the thing down. Everybody, if you want to stay here and listen to Eddie, what you do is go over to Eddie's room. Well, first what you do is you go up to settings here and you block the sound from this room. Then you can go over to Eddie's room and open it up, and then you can come back here and you can text all you like. Okay? And you can listen to Eddie while you're texting here. That's why we're leaving it open, so that you're able to do that. I'm going to go over to Eddie's now and get myself signed in. So, it's yours, Rip. Take it away.